You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
.07 and a half. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Local news and talk, getting a lot of response from our discussion with Joey and Celeste about their murdered student, Elijah Miranda, that went down at the Lind Common Apartments. And appreciate the outpouring of love and concern for Joey and Celeste and their student and the family. And that story is going to keep rocking, and it's going to get weirder and uglier, I think, but sad to say, before it's over. Before we get to our interview with Frank Knott, I just want to remind everyone we're going to do a live remote breakfast on Tuesday. We'll be at Gap Ministries near off a runway near I-10 and Prince. And it's our amazing Arizona Gives Tuesday live remote. $20 gets you an amazing buffet breakfast by Chef John Hone and his students. The food is always top drawer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a winner. So please join us for that. And again, wakeup.gapmin.com. And then we also want to thank our new sister station, The Drive, for joining the family. Thanks to Amador and the crew for making it happen. They are a perfect, hyperly local music station that's really connected to the community, that works perfect with KVOI, Poderosa, The Groove, and Urbana.
It's a really nice fit.
So we're playing music too that is evocative, as Matthew said earlier, of the music that they would play on The Drive. Good morning to Frank Knott. Frank, how are you doing, sir?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
I'm glad you're here. What is your title, and explain your company to us?
Sure. I am the Senior Managing Director of Mosaic Quarter Development, which is the developer of the Mosaic Quarter project in South Tucson across I-10 from the original Kino Complex.
And so basically, this is between the newer soccer fields south of the interstate and Kino Parkway. Is that fair?
Correct. Our borders are I-10 to the north, Kino to the west, or Kino to the east, sorry, west, and Benson to the south, and then the soccer fields to our east.
Where's Frank originally from?
Baltimore.
Okay. And you're still an Orioles fan?
I'm not.
That's okay. No one other than Matt Ressel is an Orioles fan.
I'm a Nats fan, but I'm more into hockey and soccer. So,
okay, I can talk soccer. So what's your soccer team?
Man City.
See, and I'm a Manchester United fan. This will be perfect.
We'll have a derby.
I do love Erling Haaland. He's quite a beast. doing this kind of projects. Talk about Frank's experience in this sphere. As sure. You like to say.
So I am the fourth generation of my family in this business. We started in 1908. And in between learning the whole development and construction side of the business, I took a little bit of time, about a decade, and had extensive experience as a corporate finance, real estate finance, and real estate development lawyer. And then got back into it with family members and other people.
What kind of stuff did the family build over 50, 60 years?
We did commercial, residential, office buildings, hotels, casinos, large-scale office.
What was the name of the family biz?
It was not construction.
Okay.
So
nice and simple and self-explanatory.
Simple.
All right. So how does Pima County get on the Baltimore guys' radar?
So I had a couple of friends in town who are tied to the hockey and other sports organizations in the community based on my children's travel sports. And
I know what that's
they
like.
Had asked, they had said there was the possibility, they had heard the possibility that Pima County was going to come out with an RFP or procurement for this property. And they asked if I would take a flyer and come out and meet with them and talk with them about it and see what the public opinion was on what sports activities and entertainment facilities were needed in Tucson and Pima County. And that was in the summer of 2018.
Sure.
I liked what I saw and I liked what I heard. It was clear even after a couple visits, the dearth of facilities that existed, the lack of them, especially indoor sports, not just ice, although we get a lot of talk about ice at Mosaic Quarter. And so I took the next 2 years and started coming out every couple weeks, every month, meeting with different people, getting a lay of the land. And when the county came out with the procurement, we had assembled a team that I knew could deliver what was needed in the region and that would be self-sufficient and work well for the county and the community.
We are notoriously underparked as a community. Whatever the national, there's some parks, my guy Gary Davidson, who used to be on the Pima County Parks Commission, always brings up that we, as a region, we're one of the most underparked places in the country right now. So I can see that. What about when you say you liked what you saw? Right.
So,
what did you like? What you see? I'm always looking for people to bump me up on this, Frank. So, what did you like? What did you see that you liked?
So, I go back to my roots growing up in the 70s in Baltimore, or Baltimore, as we say.
Absolutely. Or as Chris Russo would say, Baltimore.
Right.
At the my buddy Greg and I always love the way Chris Russo, Mad Dog, says Baltimore. So,
and what I saw was very similar to what I saw when I was growing up, a multicultural community. A kind and friendly community, a community that had challenges, but a community that wanted something better for itself, and that there was an opportunity to create something really interesting and good. And I likened it to, the vision was what used to be the Baltimore City Fair. And that was it wasn't just rides and stuff. It was every neighborhood and every ethnic group in town had a huge booth. And so culture was on display, food was on display. You could walk around safely and enjoy everyone's backgrounds, their current status, and the entire way of life in Baltimore. And what I saw was the opportunity to take how the Baltimore City Fair was structured and apply it to sports and entertainment across the board.
So what about the Tucson community and the region got you excited? Because there's lots of places, Frank, who could be doing something like this at.
So, couple of things. One thing that was structural, the property itself, 90 acres, when you want to do a development like this, to assemble that level of land, that amount, it becomes an interesting game as a developer, so to speak, because you're constantly running around trying to purchase individual parcels. It becomes a multi-year exercise. It's an expensive exercise. And so to have the opportunity with the county to work to ground lease that land and then include the county in all the economics from the development, it just made a lot of sense. And then you get to how people were, and then you get to the sports. And so I'll take hockey first. You've got one sheet of ice in town. You have an extremely large youth hockey organization and an equally large adult recreational hockey group. They don't have ice between March and April, depending on how the Roadrunners do, until October. That is the time when kids and adults get better. In that when that ice isn't there here, if you had it, so that you can do lessons and clinics. But more importantly, it's when other children and adults get the bug, and if they have the opportunity to skate and to sign up. And then we looked at all the different indoor sports options. There was really only, aside from church gyms and school gyms, there was only one facility in town that was dedicated to indoor sports, and that was Sporting Chance.
Yeah, over on LaChoya Flowing Well.
Correct. And in a region where you're looking at a service community of a million people, five basketball courts is not enough.
Right.
But the issue was, from an indoor sports perspective, you had families traipsing around town to multiple locations for practices during the week. So my basketball practice might
sure,
be here
life,
this
buddy.
Day. I know. But when you have that, it inhibits growth. And if you could consolidate, an organization can consolidate their entire program in one facility and host all their practices, all their games. It's great for the organizations. It helps them grow, but it's even better for the families.
Right. And then but my counter to that would always be that if I got to drive 40 minutes to do something, that might say, you're not playing hockey. Let's play soccer.
I agree. I mean, yeah. There are family choices that come into play that overrule how facilities are done.
That's more of a big municipal parks discussion instead of what you're doing. So
right.
Let's do this. Let's go to break, Matt. And we're talking to Frank Knott. We're talking about the Mosaic development over on Keno by Keno South. If you have a question or comment, 790-2040, or you can hit me at wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. 1030 Voice. 8:21 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson. We're hanging out with Man City fan Frank Knott. And Marcus Rashford was onside on that goal that we beat you guys a couple months ago. Anyway, welcome back. Frank, a couple of you are asking me, where online would they go to find details about what you're working on this Keno South project?
So the main social media outlets are Facebook, where it's at Mosaic Quarter, and it's the same thing with Instagram.
Okay.
And the website, we had a couple coding issues recently, that were brought to our attention by someone on social media, which I appreciate. That'll be back up within a couple of days.
So we're talking about 90 acres between the Keno South soccer fields and the Keno Parkway itself.
Correct.
So let's talk about the deal itself. So you were talking about, we were talking off air a little bit, that there was a pre-development deal between you and the county after you were chosen. How many people responded to the RFP?
I believe there were four.
Okay. So you were chosen by the county to move ahead with a development agreement.
That's correct.
So you did a pre-development deal.
We did a pre-development services agreement. And that was intended so that we could get a kickstart on the designs for the first two buildings, the Iceplex and the Field House. So and the county compensated us for that in the amount of $1.825 million.
Okay.
And under that contract, when we signed the development agreement with the county, we were to reimburse them for it, which we did.
All right. So now we're, so let's talk about the process, the project itself and where you're at. So everything's privately, is going to be private money to develop in there.
Yeah, that kind of trails off the question about the deal structure.
Right.
Is it, would you mind if I went
sure,
through?
Sure, please. Yeah.
So once the development agreement was signed as a part of that, there are no county dollars going into this project. There are no bonds being issued. There's no cash being contributed. It is all privately financed by my firm and our investors who are life insurance and pension funds in the U.S.
Okay.
And as a part of that, so we developed the buildings and the athletic buildings, as we were talking about off air. The last set of approvals will be some lease documents where we will, at the same time, lease the buildings to the county and then immediately lease them back to operate them. And the purpose of that lease structure is to give the county 55% of the net cash flow created by the site.
All right, so...
So they're going to get ground rent. We're paying market rate ground rent for the land. And then the county gets 55% of the cash flow generated by the site. And then we're responsible for all operations, operation expense, debt service, everything else.
So you're paying market rate for the dirt on rent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the same number. So what's that number look like? When you say it's market rent, what is
it? It's still under negotiation for the final version of the ground lease. It's based on an appraisal that we obtained independently and an appraisal that the county obtained independently.
All right.
And then you have to mix those two together. It'll be...
What's your number that your guys are giving you?
It's in the mid to high 100,000s.
So...
Six to 750 a year.
All right. So, okay. So, and for 90 acres?
For the 90 acres, yep. Unimproved, right. Completely unimproved land.
And I'm not saying this is the gospel number because you still got to figure out the final, but somewhere right now your numbers are $600,000 to $700,000 for 90 acres.
Yep.
Okay. And then you're gonna, and then because of the way the deal's structured, you won't have to pay property taxes.
No, we are paying property taxes.
Well, how are you doing that?
Because we'll be erecting privately owned buildings on that property, and so we will be subject to all applicable property taxes.
On the buildings?
Correct.
Right. But the surrounding dirt's still owned by the county, right?
Surrounding dirt's still owned by the dirt is owned by the county no matter what.
Right.
And so, but the property taxes normally apply to building improvements.
Okay.
And so for all of the first-tier property taxes, second-tier property taxes, we will have all those in effect. And it turns that property from a zero-producing site into a fully-producing tax site.
It's on the building improvements, it's the taxes, mm-hmm. but not all of the 90 acres are going
to
be...
Well, your property taxes only apply to buildings.
Right.
So you're not going to have... You wouldn't have a situation where the property itself...
Gotcha.
Where the land itself generates the property
gotcha,
tax.
Gotcha. So you anticipate enough revenue blowing through this project that the county is going to get 55% of... The
cash flow,
net cash flow.
Correct.
Net cash flow is going to get kicked back to the county, and then how long is this deal going to go between you and the county? What's
40 years after construction is complete? So we'll finish all three phases near the end of 27, and 40 years after that is the end of the ground lease. And at the end of the ground lease, the county gets everything back for zero cost. So they get to operate the buildings. They're all designed as well beyond 40-year lives, and they'll get to operate them, own them, and profit from them.
So you're a developer. You're not a do you run such things, or are you going to hire a company to run this?
We have management teams that we hire to run the facilities.
And you haven't picked anyone yet on that?
No, we have.
Okay, who's that?
Group called Edge Sports Group.
Edge Sports Group.
Out of the Northeast area. And they operate similar facilities in Massachusetts, New Jersey, Florida, and a couple that they're working on in the Midwest.
Okay. So what's the first phase of this sucker look like?
So the first phase is MQ Iceplex, which is a 3 ice rink facility. That's the one that gets the most press. It involves the university as a tenant. You'll have Arizona Hockey being there and in the arena rink, which is 3,000 seats, and they will expand their hockey program as a result of being there to include the men's Division I club team. They'll have a women's Division I club team, which I believe opens up in 24 at the TCC, and then they'll add a men's Division II, and they'll also have a sled hockey program through their Adaptives group.
Sure. Tell when you talk about the interest in hockey in this town, right? Because most people, I grew up in New York. I'm an Islanders fan. I understand how I had people play for the New York Long Island Islanders. It's crazy. Hockey is commissioned. That is committed sport. I thought soccer was committed sport. When you're a youth hockey player, this ruins everyone's lives, so, in a good way. When you say how many people are involved in youth hockey or these adult hockey leagues now, what are we talking about number-wise?
So you have 350 families in the Junior Roadrunners organization.
Right.
And an equal number, a little less in the Tucson Adult Hockey League. Both leagues have waiting lists.
Okay.
And the reason for that is there's only one rink in town. And that's, you know, the challenge of doing an ice rink, especially with 3 sheets, is figuring out what the need's going to be and what doesn't exist. And this is where, you know, we get the benefit of kids and families driving to Phoenix 2-3 times a week in the off season, even during the season, adults doing that during the season, to go play, take skating lessons, get clinics, because it can't exist here. It's not just that someone won't do it. It just can't exist here.
All right, hold that thought for a sec. We're at the bottom of the hour. News coming up. We're continuing on with Frank Knott, Mosaic Quarter. Again, 790-2040 if you have a question for Frank. Wake up, Tucson, 1030 The Voice. 8:34 in the morning, you're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. We're catching up and getting to know more about the Mosaic Quarter project on the south side of town with Frank Knott. Frank, welcome back, sir. Oh, we got to put your microphone on. Good morning. Welcome back, Frank. Not your fault. Thumbs McNeely over there. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So we're gonna do. You're gonna do your 3 sheets of ice,
yep.
Right? Then what else is also in the first phase?
What we call MQ Fieldhouse, which is a extremely large indoor sports facility. So there are 2 floors, and each floor, to give a local reference, each floor is 25% larger than the floor of Arizona Stadium.
Okay.
And it comes with
McHale?
No,
or
not
the
McHale.
Football stadium.
The football stadium.
I was making sure I got that right.
Yep.
Okay.
And so on each floor, we have wood surface, so we can do basketball, badminton, volleyball. But then we also have interchangeable turf surfaces, so we can do indoor soccer. We can actually do 7-on-7 passing football inside the building.
Okay.
We can do rugby, do a whole lacrosse, hold a bunch of different sports. And then we also have specialized surfaces that go over the wood as well, such as a specific surface for pickleball. Given the popularity of that
sport. Sure.
So you're going to have...
I'm a big pickleball fan. True.
It's
Why not?
It's a fun sport.
It's very fun.
And especially when it's indoors during the summer, right?
Yep. And the sound annoys neighbors, which I always like too. So that's a good thing. So you have this idea that you're going to have local leagues playing in a variety of things, but at the same time, you're going to need regional/national tournaments.
Correct.
To really make the numbers click, correct?
Right. And so that's where the travel sports side of the business comes in for us. From a hockey perspective, we partner with independent sports tourism sponsors. So for hockey, it's My Hockey Tournaments out of Chicago.
Right.
And for the field house, you've got 3-Step Sports, which is a national tournament, largest national tournament sponsor for youth sports, and then also AAU, which is a well-known
sure.
brand throughout the country. So with those, you know, what you end up generating is local traffic by local organizations, but then you also have time where it's just for the public to enjoy. So there'll be pickup basketball leagues, pickup volleyball leagues, pickup indoor soccer, and then you have all your organizations in town. And then you'll have these national tournaments that come in. And that's what really drives towards the community impact value of the site.
So trying to break into those cycles of AAU and these various folks, right? So how hard is that to do? I can't believe it's easy, right? Because all these other cities want the biz too.
Right.
right, in these other facilities. So once we get over the novelty of, hey, there's a new place in Tucson, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be my concern, right? Because we've tried to do this before in this town, not at this level of facility.
So this
right?
is
we're going to do sports tourism. It's gonna, other than the Tucson Invitational Games, which Jim has done over the years, mm-hmm. I haven't seen anyone consistently do this. And this sounds like a hell of a facility, so that helps. But
what really helps, Chris, is the whole site design. So in a 90-acre site, you can host the largest AAU basketball tournaments, volleyball tournaments. You can host nationally marketed hockey tournaments. And there will be 3 hotels on site, 14 restaurants. Those aren't enough to satisfy the full tournament, but having all of your athletic facilities for a tournament in one contained site, that doesn't exist.
Sure.
You normally, the expectation you try to hit as a developer or a tournament sponsor is that people aren't driving any more than 20 to 25 minutes between games, whether it's to hotel or to venue.
Right.
And so that's the unique part. And when we came out with the design of this, we were immediately contacted by multiple sports tourism groups saying, we have to be here. This is the perfect spot to do tournaments because everything's self-contained.
So when do the so if everything goes well and after you build the sheets of ice and a field house, when do we think hotels? How soon after would hotels start coming out of the ground?
Right. So we'll open the iceplex in the field house in the fall of 25, and then in 26 we'll open another indoor sports facility that's a little smaller called the Sportsplex.
Yeah.
And then in 27 we'll open up our enclosed stadium. And then 3 hotels will arrive with that. And there's a purposeful delay on the hotels. Because we're so close to the airport, only 15 minutes, and so close to downtown, another 15 minutes or so, we have an abundance of hotels where I wanted there to be a time period where tournament sponsors that were new to Tucson were bringing people to existing assets. So existing hotels near the airport and downtown and trying to spread that community impact. And then when we do our hotels, there will only be 540 rooms total on site.
Right.
Our smallest tournament requires 700. And so in every instance of a tournament coming into town, we're not sucking up all the community impact activity or economic dollars. We're actually taking some and then pushing that out to the rest of the community in the hopes that what we will be is a driver of something positive for the overall community.
So my concern whenever I hear about new hotel product coming into Tucson, whether it's connected to your facility, because you still need to be filled, those still need to be filled with non-Mosaic business.
Yep.
to make occupancies work over a 12-month period.
When we look at it, right. having a 48-week tournament cycle at the site between different buildings.
That is aggressive, young man, but I guess you got to be.
I appreciate the young man comment, but I'm not there.
The saying that you're rocking and rolling except for 4 weeks a year.
I think there's that.
That's aggressive for this
community.
There's
that. There's the Gem Show. You have a lot of activity over at the Bridges, even though they have one or two hotels going in there as well. I think, you know, the hotel developers that we're partnering with on that, these are all well-experienced groups that understand what demographics they need and what activity levels they need to make work. And these are limited service. So these are not 4- and 5-star hotels.
Sure.
This is your, you know, Marriott, Courtyard, Staybridge Suites type facility.
I haven't looked at a star report in years, so I don't know what we're trending it as a community on our occupancies, right? I know we had a post-COVID bump because everyone wanted to get the hell out of their house.
I think the danger on a hotel is size and category. It's very easy to build it big and get the efficiencies of that scale, but that's when you run into filling it to capacity. And then if you're too high for the market or the average in the market, that runs your danger too. And I think by scaling it purposely down, these are smaller products than you would normally find for these brands. And so by doing that, we're being very conscious of not overextending ourselves.
Yeah.
And also not relying on 48 weeks of travel tournaments a year.
No, in relation to the hotel product that's really down there around you, it's all mostly limited stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. So
that's correct.
I'm always, again, whenever I hear about this, so you're saying if you're going to be busy 48 weeks a year, God bless you, young man.
Well, I think that's the other part of the deal that's interesting with the county is that we have to show the county that we will open the doors in the black, cash flow positive from day one in order for the deal to go forward. And so we have the contracts for that, and those become public record, as does everything else on the project.
Matt, let's go to a break early. I want to, when we come back, Frank's going to educate this barbarian about economic impact numbers, including job creation and then, of course, you know, regional economic impact. So Frank Knott educates Christy Simone when we come back. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Ah, little Roy. We're hanging out with Frank Knott. We're talking about the Mosaic Corridor Project on the south side of town. And again, tomorrow, U.S. Congressman David Schweikert at 7:07. The sports intern is going to preview the Final Fours for the women and the guys. And then Friday is the big 14th anniversary show. Hig Dog comes back. It'll be quite a hoot. So, Frank, welcome back. Thanks for putting up with me for the first three segments. I appreciate the conversation.
No, I've been having fun. Thanks for having me.
And so let's talk about the numbers. So I saw 46,000 regional, correct me when I get it wrong, 46,000 regional jobs.
That's correct.
And that's over a 40-year period.
That's correct.
All right, so you're going to have to explain that to Frankenstein. That's me, Frankenstein.
That's
you have to explain that to me, how you got to 46,000 jobs over that time, because I'm still sitting there going, well, that's 10,000 jobs every day. You know, and I'm kind of going, all right, Frank, how do we get to that number, bud?
So you have multiple parts of jobs to get created. So you have the construction jobs,
right,
from developing it. You have the operational jobs, which are not a massive number of jobs on site. You'll probably be at 350, 400 jobs on site permanently.
Gotcha.
But then with all the spending that takes place from tournaments coming in, people going to restaurants, people going to small businesses, you have to figure out a way to calculate that impact. And so what we do, we don't do it in our back office. We actually go to what is considered the gold standard for economic development projections, which is EMSI. It's an independent company that universities, municipalities use across the country. And you take what your construction budgets are, you take all your operational budgets, what you're looking at from tournament sponsors, what they indicate the people will spend, and you discount that. You take it backwards. So, for instance, when we look at how much money is going to be spent from a tournament, we're actually using 2016 metrics here in Tucson. And the reason for that is to account for the pandemic years and also to be conservative, so I'm not overpromising and under-delivering. And so when EMSI takes all that data, and they look at it as jobs created on site, but then when people spend at a restaurant, that doesn't just provide jobs at that restaurant, it provides downstream jobs. So where that waiter or waitress or cook or maitre d' goes to buy groceries, they count those and going into it. So when you look at that over 40 years, that's where you get the calculation from.
So the number's so high in my brain. We're not counting that we had one job occupied by 20 people over 20 years, that's 20 jobs. Did we do that?
No, you're not doing
okay,
it that
way. No. I was still trying to figure out in my brain because I feel like the number's still aggressive. Okay, so that's how that works. And then talk about your economic impact of, you say $7 billion?
$7 billion over 40 years.
Okay.
And that number includes the cash flow that we pay the county. It includes property taxes. It includes all the sales taxes we pay because this property is actually inside the city border.
Okay.
It includes the hotel surcharge taxes that get paid. And then you start looking at all the numbers that EMSI tells us are impactful, that come into being impacted from all that spending that takes place. And when you total those up, the direct spending and then the consequential spending that EMSI calculates for us, that's where you get a $7 billion figure over 40 years.
So let's talk about, because we were talking off air and I was telling you about how the current Keno fields down there are really not an asset to the people who live in that area.
Right.
Right. And so while there's going to be the private development of, I think you said 14 restaurants at full build, right?
Correct.
That they can go to, explain how the people of South Tucson, who we love to build these things, but they can never access it, use it. Talk about how this is going to be different. Because right. I think this is majorly important.
So one of the three, there are three words we use as guideposts for Mosaic Corridor: community, accessibility, and collaboration. Community, you're creating communities of different sports or having other communities come to you and expanding themselves. Accessibility includes differently abled, but it also includes economically accessible. And this doesn't just apply to the South Side. There are a number of areas, a number of people all throughout the Southern Arizona region and in Pima County, who this site might be out of reach for. And so what we created was called the Mosaic Foundation. And it's a take on sports philanthropy that's a lot different than how it works normally. And what that foundation will do, if a child wants to participate in a sport that's offered at Mosaic Quarter, whether it's a house league sport or even a travel team sport by one of the organizations, say the Junior Roadrunners, we will fund the participation and not just the fees. We fund all equipment. We fund the time, the uniforms. And if they make a travel team, everyone's eligible to try out as if, you know, they have the money to come in for a tryout. Any child can participate. And so if they make a travel team, we cover the travel costs for the family as well. So what it does, it levels the playing field for every single child, not just on the South Side, but if you're in Marana or Valley, Vail, Green Valley, doesn't matter where you are. If we offered at Mosaic Quarter, your child can play.
And that's getting funded, I assume, out of revenues generated by the property.
No, that's getting funded. Part, we do donate for every athlete that comes through the door at Mosaic Quarter. We donate 50 cents to the foundation. But the largest piece of that comes from myself and my family.
Let's talk about, talk about in relation to, what was my question? I keep talking about the Phoenix factor here, right? Because there's such a huge market, right? 4.4 million people in a market, and they are continuing to build sports facilities. You know, they have places like Reach 11. Mesa shot down their soccer facility. But how do you break into that market? Because that regional part of having convincing Phoenix teams to come down to Tucson, what's that look like? What is that? That's to me, that's a marketing convincing push. What does that look like? Because they have to be very important to making money at this thing.
So I look at Phoenix as a worthy rival. I don't look at them as something that's better than Tucson. I think that's one aspect of the opportunity we saw, was to take an attitude of, there's a little bit of a less than attitude that gets displayed sometimes in town when it comes to comparing to Phoenix. Why can't we be like Phoenix? Why don't we have this?
It's mostly true though, Frank.
Yeah, but I don't...
Yeah. I mean, I love your optimism, but...
I think there's an opportunity there for us and the community to do something totally different. And when it comes to recruiting groups from out of town, tournaments or other things, it's actually very easy to market Tucson. The geography, the culture, the food, this site, having everything self-contained if necessary, it markets itself. And that does not exist in Phoenix.
So you moved to Tucson, which is important.
I still spend a lot. I still have two of my kids are back in D.C.
I'm with you.
I'm here and there all the time.
That's okay. So one of the things we ask all newbies, now how long have you been bouncing around Tucson?
Since 2018.
All right, that's enough. So one of the things we ask all newbies to the show is, what are their three favorite locally owned restaurants they like to go to? So okay. I know you're going to say, I'm going to piss off three people that aren't in my top three, but give me three you're hitting lately. So this is important. We find out a lot about our guests by this answer.
So there are a number of the El Charro restaurants.
Okay.
A couple different ones.
Okay.
Boca Tacos is my favorite.
Okay.
And then one that's not local, but close by, I have to say it, Elvira's.
Oh, okay. So yeah, they count down to $2.
Which used to have a Tucson location until the pandemic, but those Boca and Elvira's are by far and away my favorite, and I love each of the Charro restaurants.
Very cool. All right. Well, again, check out Mosaic Quarter on Facebook and Instagram.
And then mosaicquarter.com.
Mosaicquarter.com. There may be some coding issues.
Well, those are getting fixed. And I'll have the team pass along. We've opened up a survey, Chris.
Yep.
For the public to help us understand what they would like to see of all the different offerings we're having at Mosaic Quarter. So you can select sports you'd like, things you'd like for your family, different activities. You can make comments. We'll pass along that link. It's on the social media pages, but we can pass along to you so your listeners can take a look and give us their opinions, because we want everyone's opinion on this.
What's the phase in of how the restaurants work in relation from going from one restaurant to 14 restaurants? How many years is that in the plans?
So with the Iceplex and the Fieldhouse, there will be four restaurants that open, and then an additional one, a full-service restaurant inside the Iceplex.
Gotcha.
And then when the Sportsplex opens in 2026, that's when what we call the Pavilion opens, and that'll be 10 restaurants. Plus a building that we've donated to Pima Community College for them to open up a student-run restaurant.
Okay.
And then there'll be a permanent stage there with a covered lawn for 2,500 people, and we'll be doing free entertainment every weekend. So movies, bands, musical acts, performing arts, We're partnering with a number of different organizations in town to do that. So there'll be non-athletic free reasons for people to come and enjoy the site. And then when we open the stadium, the hotels come and they'll have a couple of restaurants in there too. But all the restaurants that we've been planning ourselves will be open by 26.
And so the risk factor on this is on you and your investors.
That's correct.
Right. So if something ever happened, there's nothing in the agreement that the county, you know, on the worst case scenario.
The way the leases work, the county could have to make a payment, but we are also required to have two different things that we have to prove. Okay. So anytime I have to pay a dollar on my mortgage, I have to show that I have $3 in reserve.
Sure.
And that's for all 40 years. And we already have that
established.
That's
better than Silicon Valley Bank, so good job there. Yeah. We talk about fractional reserves on the show. We're that nerdy, so.
Yeah. So, no, I think we have a reserve system that we're mandated to have.
Okay.
And then we also have special insurance products that take care of things like a pandemic that, you know, are not commonly issued, but because of our financial background, we're allowed to do, we can do that.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's never a deal that anyone's involved in, public or private, where there isn't some element of risk.
Gotcha.
And in order to generate all that cash flow and the ground rent, the county is taking a little bit of a risk on those leases. But you'll end up seeing that we have a business plan that's an amended and revised one from the original one we put out publicly, and that will come out this spring. And that's available. It'll be available on our website, on the county's website, social media. I invite everyone to take a look at that. Give us your opinions. Give us your questions. All the things like that are spelled out very clearly.
And again, you said you're going to be going before the board this summer sometime.
Sometime in the summer, yep.
Okay. Well, again, like we were talking before we even started this conversation, this community needs a win, right? And if you execute as you're saying, this looks like a win.
I'm going to be living here for the rest of my life, and that's a good thing. You know, I'm engaged to someone locally here now, so I love it here, and I want this to be a win, not just for myself, but for the community I'm going to live in for the rest of my life.
Yeah, we're desperate for a win, Frank. So, again, like I said, it sounds like you got a good plan here, and best of luck.
Thank you. If there's any, you know, if you ever want me to come back, I'm happy to take your questions, answer your listeners' questions. I'm always happy to come by.
And I appreciate your willingness to come on and have the discussion.
Anytime. That's what I'm here for.
So I wish more people were willing to have these kind of conversations that we just had. So good job. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks for the time.
All right. MosaicQuarter.com is the website.
Correct.
And then for all you cool, well, for old farts like me, Facebook, you cool kids can go on Instagram and check it out. So good seeing you, sir. Good meeting you. And I don't know. Even though I'm a Man U fan, I think I'm sick of, I don't like Arsenal either. So I'm okay if you guys catch him at the end.
You'd always move to Tottenham.
And I do love Kevin De Bruyne. He is like one of my favorite guys. And I love how sassy he's become in the last couple of years, especially like at the World Cup. He's like, yeah, we suck. We're too old. We're not going to win anything.
What we need to do is just move you from an Isles fan to a Caps fan.
So So my thing with the Isles is once they became the Gorton's Fishermen, pretty much, by that horrible Gorton's Fishermen uni I had, I kind of gave up on them.
Okay.
Right? So I used to be a Mets fan until they hired Willie Randolph, a Yankee, as their manager. And I'm done with them, too. I'm done with baseball, pretty much. So international soccer, that's my thing. And I watch NCAA basketball only during March Madness, girls and boys. That's where I'm at. Good meeting you, sir.
Nice meeting you. Thanks for the time.
Frank Knott, Mosaic Quarter. All right. If you missed anything, KVOI.com. Tomorrow, again, U.S. Congressman David Schweikert. Lots of stuff to talk about with David. And then the semi-huge 14th anniversary show on Friday. Thank you, Matt, for a nice time. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk.